This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone, so glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you on this Friday. Thanks so much for being with us all week long. We got, of course, a busy show today. Just this hour alone, we're going to have author Karen House, Pulitzer winning journalist from the Wall Street Journal, author of a brand new book, The Man Who Would Be King, Mohammed bin MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, and the Transformation of Saudi Arabia. Got through the whole thing. It's amazing. And she's been working in Saudi Arabia since 1970. So if you want a perspective on the change and what it could mean for us and what it's meant to this point, it's pretty unbelievable. I mean, thinking where we were with Saudi Arabia on 9/11, with most of the hijackers from there, and we thought Wahhabism is part in the school district, is part of their curriculum. What are you going to do? Just look out for the next terrorist coming your way. To de-emphasizing religion, talking about entrepreneurship, empowering women, trying to revolutionize sports and fitness. I'll give you an idea of what's going on. He's far from perfect. Also, Dr. Roger Marshall, the senator from Kansas, Budget, Health, Education Committees. We got to get to the bottom of what the big, beautiful bill is and why it's underwater with the public. Should it be? Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. I think they shot 8 bullets. Our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot.
That is the president recounting 1 year ago Sunday when he was almost killed, almost a year to the day. Here we are talking in Pennsylvania, and we still have so many questions. For example, just suspending 6 Secret Services at the point is giving all the Secret Service to Jill Biden instead of Joe Biden, instead of President Trump, then a candidate. Is that the point? We'll talk about where the investigation's at.
Number two.
Agencies and in departments are making decisions all the time, but that one was troubling to me. And my bet is it's very troubling to the president. But the most important thing is that he reversed it.
That is talking about Mike Pence, the former vice president, keeping his word. That's what Donald Trump is doing. He is not abandoning Ukraine. He is giving them defense weapons and other weapons. NATO is buying them and sending them from us. By the way, he rebukes deranged Putin. He gave Putin an off-ramp. Putin didn't want to take it. President's keeping his word. Hamas held hostages. It looks like there's going to be 10 released, and a deal is, and a 60-day pause will come. We'll discuss it all.
Number one.
I think there's a pattern there that if you're breaking the law, you're protected by the Democrats, and if you're trying to enforce it, you're demonized. The same thing about the border. This, all of this violence is a symptom of the Democratic Party not saying anything.
Especially in California, and that, of course, is Victor Davis Hanson. Crackdown on illegal immigrants intensifies across the board as ICE and illegals and their outlawed defenders clash on the streets and in the churches and in the courts. We have the latest. And the latest is at a marijuana farm. Yeah, they were going to stay away from farms for the most part unless they had a killer out there that they knew they had to get. But marijuana farm illegally happening with illegal immigrants everywhere and youngsters working the fields. The ICE went in. And guess what? They were shot at. They're trying to find the guy. They got some video of it. But it just shows how dangerous this is getting. I mean, you got the danger in San Francisco. Did you see that video of them swarming the cars? Over in Buffalo, a man arrested and charged with threatening to kill a Homeland Security agent. Remember that? On July 4th, it was easy to get caught up in the flood. It was so tragic. But in Alvarado, Texas, an ICE facility was attacked in an organized way. McCallum, Texas, same thing, border attack. So they're on the offensive trying to stop law enforcement, ladies and gentlemen. Law enforcement. This is a version of defund the police by, I think, a bunch of Democratic states who are used to running things. Let illegals be illegals. Let the homeless live on the streets. You can do human trafficking. You can do drugs out in front. Now with this administration, here's Tom Homan, cut one.
What happened in California is just another example of protesters becoming criminals. And they've been emboldened by even members of Congress who compare ICE to Nazis and racists and terrorists. I mean, the rhetoric is so high. And I said 2 months ago, it's going to end up with a loss of life. And we had one the other day in Texas. And it's not over. I mean, the rhetoric has to end.
It is so true. And if you want to hear some rhetoric, I'll give you a taste of it. Cut three. Hakeem Jeffries.
There needs to be blood to grab the attention of the press and the public. How do you respond to that, Leader Jeffries? Are Democrats not doing enough to fight these developments?
Well, we are in a more is more environment in terms of the unprecedented assault on the American way of life and our country that has been launched by Donald Trump and compliant House Republicans.
So when a Democrat says there should be blood in the streets, Jeffries as a leader says, obviously, that rhetoric's not acceptable. That's how you start. And then what you say next is important, but that's how you start. Instead, we're living in a more is more environment. I didn't even heard that expression before. Is that supposed to mean more is more? So blood in the streets, what's more than that? A lot of blood in the streets? What's more than that? A really, really lot of blood in the streets? More is more in the environment. What is that? Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, does not have these problems. He says this is what he sees happening over there. Cut eight.
I think what's happened in California, they've really developed a sense of entitlement to simply disregard federal laws they don't like, particularly with regard to immigration. And this has been happening for many, many years. And so I think the situation has escalated. I think that clearly they're in the wrong. But this is likely not going to stop in California anytime soon, because I think this has just been embedded in the psyche there that somehow they can disregard laws they don't want to follow.
And that's what they're hoping to do. And it's not going to work. But they are going to the courts today. And it looks like yesterday they were in court. Today they're going to get a ruling. And a Biden-appointed judge expected to issue a ruling curtailing the administration's federal immigration operations in Southern California. How can you do that? How can you curtail that? It's not up to you. It's a federal problem. This is a federal law enforcement agency, and this is illegal immigration, which is a federal issue, hence the border. States suffer because the federal government doesn't do its job. So a judge is signaling that on Thursday that she will likely restrict the Trump's administration's ability to do their job. The suit filed by a coalition of illegal immigrants, they write migrants, activists, and local governments accuse the administration of racial profiling. They say agents are relying on race, language, location, and type of work when making detention shops. You know what also picking up? Chinese. You know what they picked up in Nebraska? Head of MS-13. A federal government lawyer denied the agents are racially profiling. It's called going after leads with warrants, you idiots. But if this judge is just going to get overturned, I believe. So they'll try to curtail ICE even further and give these Antifa characters a feeling like they're going to win. So recapping the whole thing, federal agents conduct massive operation in Camarillo on the marijuana farm. They got huge friction, got their guys. Politicians push this false narrative that food workers and children are being raided. No, 10,000 have been reclaimed. They're looking for 400,000 they got in under Joe Biden. You know those little kids that walked around with little pins on with their name and address they want to be sent to? Those 4 and 3-year-olds at the border? We've all seen that video. What happened to those kids? That's what we're asking. Now, this administration says you can't just show up with a passport and grab them. Now you have to show you have a job, you have a U.S. citizenship, the living conditions that they're going to be in, and how you got the position of sponsor. That's going to help, along with getting the others. 8 accompanying migrant children were recovered at the cannabis farm. The child labor investigation initiated it. Situation there is still ongoing and active. And yes, we're defending the shooter and having trouble getting the masked shooter at ICE. ICE is the problem. I'm going to come back and talk about MBS, talk about Saudi Arabia and what it means for the Middle East. This might be the most impactful leader in the world today, who's done more to change his country than anybody else. And for the most part, it's all been positive. We'll get the inside story when we come back in the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
You know that one friend who somehow knows everything about money? Yeah, now imagine they live in your phone. Say hey to Experian, your big financial friend. It's the app that helps you check your FICO score, find ways to save, and basically feel like a financial genius. And guess what? It's totally free. So go on, download the Experian app. Trust me, having a BFF like this is a total game changer.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back, and I want to bring in Karen House. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and former publisher of the Wall Street Journal, author of a brand new book, which is great, The Man Who Would Be King, Mohammed bin Salman and the Transformation of Saudi Arabia. She might be this nation's premier expert on Saudi Arabia, from which he witnessed and wrote about firsthand since 1970. And she did focus on one of the most interesting leaders in the world who's done more to change their country than any leader maybe in our lifetime so rapidly. He hasn't been perfect, and neither is Saudi society, but man, has he changed things. Karen, welcome back, or welcome.
Thank you, Brian. So, I'm one of your morning watchers.
I'm honored. So thanks so much for doing this book, and we're going to talk on Sunday on One Nation about it. Yes. I saw you with Brett. It is great. Well, read every word of it. Your perspective is invaluable. First off, on MBS, how does this guy get so powerful so quick? And how did being passed over for a position lead to the most fortunate position of his career?
That's an interesting question. Yes, I think, you know, as a child, he says his mother, who was the third wife of Salman, his father, told him, you know, don't be a also-ran, be as good as the first wife's children and get out there and work. And he says, I looked for opportunities that my cousins didn't see, and when I saw one, I took it. So he seems to have always kind of been felt a bit down the ladder, but determined to try to get to the top of the ladder. And I think what really helped him bond with his father, who is the one who really put him where he is. His father's two eldest sons died within a year of each other, and their brothers were busy with their own families, and Mohammed was about, I think, 16 or 17, so he just spent a lot of time with his father, showed a lot of interest. He's clearly intelligent, I would say, from my conversations with him. So he absorbed a lot. He listens well. And then when his father became king, he was there at his elbow to reform the government.
It's kind of interesting that he was number two in his law school class, but he was passed over for a position, you say, for nepotism, which is a joke because everyone seems to be related to the royal family. Yeah. And then the king takes him in and says, just come over and work with us. And he gets a chance to see the running of the country, where he gets the opportunity at that moment where he says he was actually ready to get the job. How important was the Ritz lockup for him to assume power? What was that about?
Well, that occurred in 2017, I guess. And his father had been in power for 2 years, and they wanted to reduce, if not get rid of, corruption. And for years, when I was going to Saudi Arabia, people said that 30% of the government budget was just siphoned away by this prince and that businessman. And so he, in his determination to develop the country, you can't let money just ooze out if you want to spend it on big projects. So arresting a lot of the royals and some prominent business people and putting them in the Ritz-Carlton until they agreed to give up big sums of money was, a first of all, a big statement against corruption. Secondly, and as important, it was intended to remove from power the previous king's two most prominent sons, who they felt harbored the desire to rule the country, that were competitors. So Mitab bin Abdullah, who was head of the National Guard, and they arrested him. He is said to have paid $1 billion And he is, in essence, under house arrest in Saudi Arabia now. So, and his brother, Turkey, refused to pay anything and is still in prison, I'm told.
Well, so...
But,
so that's two things.
It removed competitors and it diminished corruption.
So he takes over. And, you know, of course, there's not tolerance for people who speak out, and that's still the existence. But he wants to start empowering women. He starts bringing sports. He starts allowing them to drive. He wants them to be seen. He does not enforce the dress code. And what you say, and this is the most fascinating, you said that MBS inherited a Saudi mired in religious extremism, lethargy, and failed five-year plans. He chained the religion, and since then has given the kingdom constant action, confidence, and the grand goals of his vision in 2030. If you told me after 9/11 that they'd be able to sideline, religion and have it play a role, but not a dominant role in society, you would have said I was crazy, or I would have said you were crazy if you had said that. But that's exactly what he did.
Yeah. I think he did it because he is now 39. He was, when his father came to power, 29 and began working with his father. So and 60% of Saudis are under 30. So he knew that generation, and they were basically one of the subjects of my first book on Saudi Arabia, their frustration at the heavy hand of religion, which allowed them nothing to do. No entertainment, no movies, no mixing with women. A young man was not allowed to enter a shopping mall alone because he might prey on a woman. So men had a particularly miserable life, and women didn't have one any better because they were basically kept at home unless they were a school teacher. Yeah. That was kind of the career open to them.
It's amazing. That's why you always hear, too. You always hear, you know, they live for the afterlife. You look at these extremists, Hamas, Hezbollah, ISIS. Mm-hmm. They live for the afterlife. Nobody's trying to say, live for this life. And if you want to live for this life, make it better. Like, kind of like the American attitude. Here's what he said to Brett Baer last year. Cut 36.
What do you see 10, 20, 30 years for Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia and really the perfect track. Since that time, we would be among the top 7 GDP globally. I'm trying to get Saudi Arabia back on the right track.
You're a data guy, clearly.
We can see today. Today we are the largest 17, number 17 ranked as the largest GDP in the world, but in G20, we are almost ranked number 15 from 20 in just a few years.
And he wants to spread out the economy, not just an oil economy. He wants to be a tourist attraction. Is it, last question, we only have a minute, is it working?
Yes, it is so far. I mean, women are driving, women are working everywhere. They have provided a huge boost to the economy. And the tourism industry is definitely developing, and sports is a part of that. That's part of a way of attracting foreigners to come and visit the kingdom. So far, it's working. He still has a ways to go to transform the economy off of oil, because it's still a huge percentage of the budget revenue and the country's GDP. But they are making progress.
You wrote such an important book, Karen House, and your perspective just can't be replicated. Pick up the book, The Man Who Would Be King, all about MBS. Karen House, thanks so much.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, these leftist politicians that are old enough to know better need to tone down the rhetoric. You'll remember, Brian, that they used to say they wanted to abolish ICE back in 2018. They talked about defunding the police in 2020. Mm-hmm. And now they want the rest of America to believe that arresting illegal aliens inside of the United States is somehow Gestapo tactics or is something that we shouldn't want in the United States, when in fact the laws that are on the books that these patriots are enforcing have been on the books for decades.
So that's Ron Vitiello. Last night, he's a former Border Patrol. Now he's senior advisor. And he's saying that the rhetoric against ICE is so out of control that everything is almost backwards. In California, they think the illegal immigrants run the city, run the state. And they have a judge that might try to limit ICE activity in California, where they want the marijuana farms and found 8 minors under 10 years old working. And they think the big story is, why is ICE going on a farm? Well, it was an illegal marijuana farm full of illegals. How about that to start? And they got a warrant. It's crazy what's going on in California. I don't think we should accept it. Maybe Dr. Roger Marshall agrees. He's the senator from Kansas. He's on budget, health, and education committees. And I do want to talk about the big, beautiful bill that passed. But, Senator, your thoughts about what we're seeing in California especially.
Yeah, Brian, well, good morning. My dad, a 35-year career police officer, so this really hurts me, kicks me in the gut that there's this lack of respect for law and order. Just very concerning. I think that people don't understand the situation where the cartel is embedded across the entire country. The Chinese triad is usually typically involved with this marijuana factories as well, abusing labor. They bring people across the borders illegally, and then to pay the cartel back or to pay the Chinese triad back, they put them into these sweatshops like you're describing as well. But at the end of the day, I'm grateful for our ICE officers. And just remind folks, there's 400,000 violent, illegal criminal aliens in this country. Thanks to Joe Biden, we've got to get them out of here. I just say hats off to the ICE officers, and I appreciate what they're doing.
They got 10,000 minor kids they found. They need to catch up to 400,000 that came through the border, along with 8 million at least over the last 4 years. Even John Kerry, a couple of days ago to the BBC, said one of the things that Democrats forgot to do is understand you need a country, can't have a country without a border. They should have enforced the border. Do your colleagues say to you, I don't know what we were thinking, sorry about lying, or were they telling you that they were embarrassed by what they were seeing the last 4 years?
They're not, Brian. They have Trumpitis, whatever you want to call it. It's went from an obsession to an absolute psychosis on the other side. And these are people, I mean, I feel like I have developed good relationships with my friends across the aisle, but anything to do with Trump, it's bad. And they just have, again, it's a psychosis. They're detached from the reality of it and fail to mention any of this. But the good news I'll say is this, is that regardless, the border's secure. We have funded border security for the next 4 years. We're going to get 2,000 miles of border wall built as well. So we're going in the right direction. But again, hats off to these ICE officers who are going into some pretty tough situations.
I mean, you got the medical background, and everybody's talking about Medicaid, and people are going to die on Medicaid. And then you watch Larry Summers gives this editorial in the New York Times, former Treasury Secretary for Obama. He says this, the cruelty of these cuts in Medicaid is matched only by their stupidity. Medicaid beneficiaries will lose, but so will the rest of us. The cost of care that is no longer reimbursed by Medicaid will instead be borne by hospitals and passed through to paying patients only at higher levels, because delayed treatment is more expensive. When rural hospitals close, everyone nearby loses. Hospitals like the one where my daughter practices can no longer accept emergencies by air because those beds are occupied by patients with chronic diseases and no places to go. Is that in your bill, these type of Medicaid cuts?
Look, we're actually increasing the spending on Medicaid. We're increasing the spend on Medicaid greater than the rate of inflation. It's going to go up $200 billion a year when it's all said and done. But Brian, I just want to emphasize, our plan is trying to save Medicaid for those who need it the most. We're trying to save it. We will save it for senior citizens in nursing homes, for people with disabilities, for pregnant women, for children. For 25 years, I delivered a baby every day in rural America at a rural hospital that I was helping run. Half of my patients were Medicaid. We'll talk about rural hospitals in a second, but I just want to emphasize that we are trying to save Medicaid. The only people who are going to look Medicaid are folks that are unwilling to work or volunteer 20 hours a week. We have folks in Kansas finishing up the wheat harvest right now that are working 20 hours a day. I'm telling you, work requirements are wildly popular. Maybe 70-80% of Americans support some type of work requirements. So as long as you're willing to work 20 hours a week, you're going to keep Medicaid.
Yep.
But on the other hand, we can't keep going up. We went up 50% in 5 years. It's unsustainable. One last stat. In two decades ago, there was only 7 million people, healthy Americans, on Medicaid. 7 million. Today, there's 35 million healthy people on Medicaid. It's just simply unsustainable.
I hear you. And don't you have a special rural hospital fund? Was it $50 billion? Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk about rural hospitals just for a second. Yes, we put $50 billion, which is more than enough. We have to agree that the status quo with Medicaid as it is not working, okay? We have 1,400 critical access hospitals across the country, like you mentioned earlier, 1,400 of those. 60% of them are losing money, on average $600,000 each. So the status quo is not working. Why? The problems with rural hospitals is twofold. Number one is we've lost our population. We have counties in Kansas that have 50-bed hospitals that have lost half their population. The average census in these hospitals is 3 patients a day. Can you imagine if you owned a hotel with 50 beds and you only have 3 right. patients a day in it? It's that situation. So that's a big part. And the second thing is the rural economy. The hospitals are a reflection of the rural economy, and what we've done in this bill is help the rural agriculture economy by helping more, a little bit more with crop insurance. We've done some of these business taxes, which will be good for farmers or small businesses as well. So there's a lot in this bill to help that American farmer, help stabilize that rural economy.
And, Senator, I think you're going to play a outsized role in telling people what's in the bill. Because passing it was as hard as it was, might be the easier part. But yep, explaining to like working class people on tips and overtime and Social Security, $5,000 in Social Security deductions for seniors, obviously against Social Security. But I want you to hear what you're up against. Here's the minority leader in the House.
These so-called work requirements are just a smokescreen. Because more than 90% of the people who receive Medicaid benefits who can work do work right now in the United States of America.
So, your thoughts?
Well, number one is we have 7 million healthy American men working age that are not working. 7 million healthy American men. Working age are not working. We have 8 million open jobs. I think, you know, you said you're not go back and forth with the numbers as well, but 60%, what our numbers say, 60% of the people on Medicaid that are healthy are not working. 60% of them. But regardless, well, why is a job a bad thing? When in this world did all of a sudden a work ethic become a bad value? It's kind of like the law and order issue we talked about earlier. I think helping people get a job brings dignity. It brings purpose to life. You think about the chronic diseases we have. One of them is depression and anxiety. There's nothing better for a person with depression and anxiety to help them get, you know, integrated back into society and help them get a job with a purpose. So here we have two parties, one of them saying job is bad, and here we have the Republicans saying, gosh, we think work and having a job is a good thing. So I think that's why the Republican Party is getting bigger.
No, I think so. It's so interesting because they did a review. It looks like you guys got less of the white votes, or Trump got less of the white votes in 2016, but he got more votes. He's diversifying the number of people, as well as the youthful vote, who are now losing men and need a direction. I just looked at the strategy. Every party not in power has a strategy to get back into power.
Right.
And Tom Tillis thinks the strategy the Democrats going to use wanted to get back in power is to do what you guys did with Obamacare, which we know had so many holes and problems and untruths that he got shellacked and lost 63 seats in the House after it passed. Does Tom Tillis, who I think you're friendly with, what does he see in the bill? Why does he dislike it so much? And what does he see that you don't, or vice versa?
Well, Brian, I think the proof in the pudding is going to be a year from November is what's the economy like? Is inflation down? Are the price of groceries down? Is employment up? Is the economy going in the right direction? So there's a whole lot of noise out there going on. But I think what we have to do is keep reminding people, like you said, if you're a union worker and you're not getting taxed on overtime, this is what you're getting. You're a senior citizen. It's $12,000 more per couple that you get to deduct. So we have to keep micro targeting different people, saying this is what's good for you. For, you know, I mentioned some things for agriculture, the small business benefits, making permanent these tax benefits for writing off research and development and the bonus depreciation, writing off interest. All those things are important. So we think the economy is turning around. We in Kansas, I can tell you, because of these tariffs, manufacturing jobs are exploding. People that are making new orders now want to know the guarantee of what the price is going to be in 6 months when they need this. So I think it's the economy, stupid. So I think it'll come down to the economy, and we'll see who's right or wrong about this bill.
So I want to talk about Ukraine, and we have that situation where we pause weapons. Now they're back, and the president says, no, they're getting Patriots, and they're going to get to others. NATO's going to buy them from us. We're going to get them over. Biden's arms run out in September. I want you to hear what Tom Tillis said. Cut 13.
I mean, this whole idea of having a pause in Ukraine defensive arms, right. That's just amateurish. I mean, that's from somebody who doesn't understand large organization dynamics. So, you know, I don't regret the decision I made back then based on the facts as I knew them today. But today I am beginning to wonder if maybe Armed Services was a little bit generous with respect to their assessment of his capabilities as a manager of the world's largest, most complex and arguably consequential organization.
And as much as I'm in support of Ukraine aid, I think there's a lot of people in the Republican Party that aren't. I think Tom Tillis is blaming Pete Hegseth for doing something that a lot of Republicans are not in support of giving aid to Ukraine. Where do you stand?
Look, this war is it 3 years old, Brian? I think it's 3 years old.
Yeah.
3 years old now, and Europe keeps making promises. This should be Europe's war, not America's war. They still only have 9 of some 27 countries that are at 2% of GDP on military spending. We have 100,000 troops in Europe. We're spending $50 billion a year in Europe. How can a French man look at his wife and look at his daughter and say, don't worry, the Americans will protect us again? So I think America is doing everything that we need to do. I have to trust President Trump in this. I think we need to keep giving him leeway. Look, I'm not a fan of Putin. I wish Putin would go to The Hague. They would try him and hang him by the neck till he's dead. But beyond that, I think that NATO made some huge mistakes. No more than we can tolerate missiles in Cuba can he tolerate Ukraine being a NATO country. So we keep making these huge mistakes strategically. If this is Europe's war, they need to step up and do their part. That's where I am on this.
Vladimir Putin is now embarrassing the president, who gave him leeway, took a lot of political strife in doing it, including from our allies. And Putin essentially picked up the pace, is now going for civilian targets, blasting with drones. China, 92% of every drone that Russia has is full of Chinese parts. So this is a war that that really affects America. If Kyiv falls, that's going to be on President Trump, just like Kabul is on Biden, don't you think?
Well, Brian, I think history is going to not decide that probably for decades after we're gone. But again, I go back to what doesn't make sense right now. Since before this broke out, I asked the Biden administration to put more banking sanctions on Russia. Only about 70% of what could be done is being done from a bank sanctions. Europe continues to buy oil and gas from Russia to fund this war. I mean, are we trying to stop it, or are we trying to fund it? I want the killing to stop, Brian. That's all I can tell you. I want the killing to stop. I know that's President Trump's goal as well. We gave him leeway. He helped initiate the peace agreement between Pakistan and India, one between Rwanda and Congo. I mean, everyone's even has missed that news that we stopped a war down there that's been going on for decades as well. A peace treaty in Gaza, a peace treaty between Iran and Israel. I just think that President Trump is doing his best. If anyone can get this deal done and stop the killing, it's going to be President Trump.
Yeah, Prime Minister of Israel said yesterday they agreed to start talks on a permanent ceasefire once the 60-day truce starts. It could be this weekend. We get 10 hostages back and 10 bodies. I think they're going to get way too many prisoners who end up being terrorists, sadly. Maybe they learned their lesson. Who knows? Two sources told the Haaretz Daily and intelligence on the conditions of the hostages are being given to Netanyahu's office, and they got to decide. Think about this, Senator Marshall. They have to decide who the 10 to get out. out of, it's unbelievable, out of the probably 25 that are left. And they're all men, and they're all obviously suffering. So this is going to be pretty intense weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you know, war is horror. President Eisenhower said something to the effect of, I hate war as only a person who's lived it can, with all its brutality and its futility. No one wins when there's war. And I think that, that America sometimes just fuels these fires in the past. We need to roll them back. I got one more point on the EU. Russia has an economy the size of Italy. And Russia has pushed Europe around for decades militarily. They need to suck it up and start contributing to their own protection.
I hear you, Senator. And I think they got the message of the last NATO summit, finally. Senator Roger Marshall, I appreciate it. Always great.
Yeah, Brian, thanks for having me.
All right. Back in a moment to close out the hour. If we can, we'll squeeze in some calls. 1-866-408-7669.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're always hedging, you know, because in the back of our minds, we weren't raised with the certainty of maleness that, you know, kind of the confidence that young men in their 30s have, which they haven't earned. They just have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't start feeling that and owning that until our 50s and 60s at a time when we start to be treated as invisible in society.
Okay, there's so much there. You know that podcast that nobody listens to, but we pull clips of because they're so jaw-droppingly weird? That's another one. That's Kamala Harris saying, Michelle Obama coming out and saying that men have a confidence they don't deserve in their 30s. Women get in 50s and 60s, and then they're invisible. Women are invisible in their 50s and 60s. Well, you just decide. If you have a visible job like former first lady and you want to be out there, you'd be the most visible personality in politics or in women's movement. But that's your choice. I don't know what you're talking about. But that just underlines the Democratic way of thinking. If you look at some of the results from the election, the Democratic Party lost ground on the 2024 election on all demographic groups: white people, black people, Latino, young, rural, and ex-urban voters. But all the defections had one thing in common. Democrat losses were significantly greater among men than among women, because they have no idea how unattractive they are to men and how done every man is with the put-downs and the apologies that evidently we're supposed to make. And I have no idea why anyone would listen to that podcast.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. We got an important hour coming your way. Senator Pete Ricketts is standing by of Nebraska, Foreign Relations Budget Committee. And Kendall Quayles will be with us, too. Kendall is a Minnesota GOP gubernatorial candidate. Great personal story. Wants to oust Governor Walz. Keep in mind, people think Minnesota is invariably blue, but President Trump really believes that he could have won all three times Minnesota. That's how close he felt he got. We'll see, because Tim Walz has embarrassed himself on the world stage, in my view, every time he speaks. He's just an embarrassment. Maybe the people of Minnesota have begun to realize that. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. I think they shot 8 bullets. Our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot.
And so is our SWAT guy, too, local Butler police. Almost a year to the day when President Trump was almost assassinated in Butler, Pennsylvania. And the questions and impact are still being felt. What do we really know about the shooter? What was really changed after all this Secret Service investigation? And what about the president's fearless, defiant response? Is that the one thing, more than anything else, that won him the presidency?
Number two.
Agencies and departments are making decisions all the time, but that one was troubling to me. And my bet is it's very troubling to the president. But the most important thing is that he reversed it.
That is the former Vice President Mike Pence keeping his word. Trump doesn't abandon Ukraine and rebukes a deranged Putin and is about to help get 10 Hamas held hostages home out of Gaza. We have the latest on Israel, Iran, and Gaza.
Number one.
I think there's a pattern there that if you're breaking the law, you're protected by the Democrats, and if you're trying to enforce it, you're demonized. The same thing about the border. All of this violence is a symptom of the Democratic Party not saying anything.
Yeah, that is true, and Victor Davis Hanson nailed it. Crackdown on illegal immigrants intensifies across the board as ICE and illegals and their outlawed defenders clash on the streets, especially in California and in the courts. We have the latest. A quick reminder, if you ever can't catch the show live, catch the podcast every day, the Brian Kilmeade Show podcast. Get it everywhere that you prefer to get your podcast. Let's bring in Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. Senator, welcome.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on.
So, Senator, you don't have these problems in Nebraska that California's having. They seem to think that illegal immigrants have the right to stay in this country and are offended what ICE is doing, including the mayor trying to get him out of MacArthur Park that's riddled with human trafficking as well as needles. And then yesterday at an illegal marijuana farm with a warrant, they go in, they save 8 under 10-year-old kids. They pull them out of there, but yet they had to deal with a shooter and basically look like Antifa.
Yeah, it really is sad when you don't have local law enforcement or the state officials cooperating with Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Look, if you're here illegally, you're breaking the law. That is just the way it is. And we have to enforce the law. We have to be a nation of laws. And we certainly should focus on the people who are the most dangerous, the people who are convicted of murder, people who are convicted of rape, people who are involved in the drugs. But anybody who's here illegally has broken the law. It's pretty straightforward.
How about this? And I'm sure you know this already, but on July 9th, two migrants were arrested with MS-13 ties in Nebraska. You don't think in Nebraska I'm MS-13. I'm used to that by me on Long Island.
Yeah, this is one of the scourges we've seen when President Biden opened the border. I saw it when I was governor because I overlapped that as governor and then, of course, the senator. And when he did that, we saw the amount of drugs coming into our state just skyrocket. You know, 2, 3, 5, 10 times as much things as fentanyl, methamphetamine, cocaine all came in. Our law enforcement, our statewide law enforcement, went from taking off just a few dozen pills laced with fentanyl before Biden became president to like over 151,000 in just 6 months. I mean, it was crazy how much drugs we saw come in just when Biden opened it up. And that was here in Nebraska, and we saw it. Our young people, like Taryn Lee Griffith, was a young mother of two, took one of those fentanyl-laced pills and died from it. And that, to me, that's murder. And that's what we saw when Biden opened the border. I mean, thank God that the president has gotten that border closed down, and now he's working on cleaning up the immigration mess that Biden left.
How do you feel about what the president's saying? He's working on a plan to give long-term meat packers, perhaps hospitality workers and farmers, some relief, not citizenship, but ability, maybe a different type of work visa to stay if they're sponsored by their employer. These are some of the things we're hearing. There's a lot of people on the right are really angry at that. Everybody's got to go. What about Senator Ricketts? How does he feel?
The first thing we got to do is secure the border. That's what the president's got to do.
Done.
That's frankly, yeah. Well, we got more work to do, right? We got to get this. We got this one big, beautiful bill passed, which has got $46 billion in it to build that wall system. And I say system because it's not just a system, or it's just not just a wall. It's not just a steel. It's also got the fiber. It's got the cameras. It's a whole system to detect people coming across the border, people, the illegal drugs, and all that sort of thing. I think once we've got that done, then we can start having a conversation about what do we want to have as a country for an immigration system. But it's got to be an immigration system that serves our purposes, our needs as a country, and not the system we have today, which is just like if you've got that, you know, family connection, you automatically get preference. I mean, what we need to do is be talking about, well, who are the people we need here? Who are the skilled people we need? What are the industries we need to have them in? You know, that sort of thing. But that's going to be a much longer conversation. We got to focus on cleaning up the immigration mess that Biden left.
So I want you – so since you're tapping your foreign relations, I want to talk about the bill, more about the bill too. But it looks like the president's going to send Patriots that's going to be bought and paid for by NATO and other weapons. He is extremely angry at Putin. He was expressed to Foreign Minister Lavrov by our Secretary of State over in Asia yesterday. And I think they're going to meet with China, who's also doing everything possible to make sure Russia is successful in Ukraine. So Mike Pence said this about the stop-start when it comes to weapons, Cut 14.
When you've served at the level I've served at, it's a big government, and a lot of people in your agencies and in departments are making decisions all the time. But that one was troubling to me. And my bet is it's very troubling to the president. My expectation is that he'll get to the bottom of it. He will find out who initiated that decision. But the most important thing is that he reversed it.
Your thoughts about the stop-start with weapons, because I know the president's never been gung-ho about about supporting Ukraine and thought he could convince Putin to stop fighting. He seems to have reversed course.
The president has done a fantastic job on the international stage. You look what he's done with regard to getting Iran and Israel to de-escalate. He's getting that peace, that ceasefire, and get some of our hostages back and some of the Israeli hostages back with Hamas, Israel, or India and Pakistan. And he's taking on this very tough thing with Putin, and he gave Putin a chance. And the president is really coming to the point now where he knows Putin is not wanting to have peace. And so there's only a couple things we got to do now. We got to smack the heck out of him on sanctions, and we got to supply weapons to him. You know, the Defense Department's job is to make sure we've got the weapons to protect our country. I think the president has decided that we've got to make sure we get those get weapons to Ukraine, and we can balance both those things. We've got to arm Ukraine so that Putin is not successful. And once Putin realizes he can't be successful, that's when I think he will come to the table. I appreciate the president trying to make the effort here, but I think the president's come to the realization that Putin really is not an honest broker here. He's not somebody who's trying to get the peace. And we're going to have to put a lot more pressure on him to get him there.
I guess so. He's has so many drones. He's sending hundreds every night. So I wonder whether there's a way to jam them, let alone block them, because you don't want to block drones with Patriots. And they got dummy drones, too. So it's amazing what they're innovating in the battlefield. Just real quick on Iran. They made a statement a couple of days ago. They said, we could assassinate Trump while he's sunbathing, that they got drones. They know exactly where he is. They say Trump has done something so that he can no longer sunbathe at Mar-a-Lago. As he lies there with his stomach in the sun, a small drone might hit him in the navel. It's very simple. That's according to an advisor to the Ayatollah. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's utterly ridiculous. Iran has had a plot to try and assassinate Trump for years and haven't been able to get it done. And, you know, this is just really lashing out on the Iranian administration because they know that President Trump has – force them to not, start getting their stuff together with regard to this enrichment program. You know, they're going to have to give that up, and they're not liking that idea. But that's what's going to have to happen here if they're going to have any sort of peace here. So I think this is just bravado on their part. You saw that the Ayatollah also said they won that 12-day war. That's ridiculous. You know, their air defenses are a shambles. Their missile launchers are blown up. We've severely damaged their enrichment program. We need to keep the pressure on Iran, and we need to keep the pressure. You mentioned China earlier for both Russia and Iran. We got to get the pressure on China. And ultimately, we may have to, you know, cut off Iran from being able to sell any oil there if they don't come to the table and give up this enrichment program.
Are you for the president? And he's indicating he's going to go for the sanctions. He's got 85 senators to approve massive sanctions, including 500% tariffs or sanctions on anyone who buys Russian oil. Are you for that?
I am one of the original bills, as a matter of fact. And the fact that you've got 85 senators shows that it's got broad bipartisan support. yes, we need to put – this is part of what I'm talking about. Put more – smack the heck out of Russia on sanctions and start penalizing the people who are doing business with them.
Great. Senator, Don Bacon's retiring from a district that they say that he's uniquely qualified to win as a Republican, that it's normally a Democratic district. Do you know if that – could you tell us if that's true?
The district itself is split about 50-50 when it looks to voter registration, and Don did a fantastic job of winning that district. We're going to have some very good Republican competitors come up, but, you know, we'll have a contested primary. The Democrats are going to have a contested primary as well. So this will be a, you know, a battleground district. There's no doubt about it. It's one of the few purple districts left in the country. But I'm confident that we can get the right candidate there, and with the right support, we can win.
President's bill passed July 4th. It's got 38% approval rating. What don't the American people understand about the bill?
As Republicans, we got it. First of all, we have seen just the media go after this bill. So, you know, just the mainstream media is just so in the tank for the Democrats. It's just sad. And, of course, the Democrats are feeding them the lies to talk about. Look, this bill avoided a $4 trillion increase, tax increase on the American people. In Nebraska, that would have meant over $2,400 tax increase. Now, what's going to happen is the Democrats have overplayed their hand on this. When people see just how big a benefit this is, the Democrats are going to be in big trouble because this bill is going to kick off economic investment. The things we did to be able to avoid that tax increase, but also no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, reducing taxes on seniors. People are going to appreciate that. They're going to love that. The businesses, especially small businesses, are going to love what we did with regard to allowing them to expense research and development and investing in plant and equipment. That means we'll see a tremendous amount of investment by businesses creating jobs. You know, if you go back and look at the 2017 tax cut, I think average incomes went up $4,000. And this is projected to do the same thing, $4,000 to $7,000 by the Council of Economic Advisors. This will go up, and then you throw in the tax breaks on top of it. People's real incomes will go up, and they will see that and appreciate it. They'll spend the money. The economy will be strong. This is going to be a really great deal for the country. You know, it's rare that you have the chance to put the country on the right track with a bill that's a once-in-a-generation opportunity. And once we just got to get out there, we got to tell people how great this is going to be on so many levels. I've got to tell you, the New York Times had some sort of editorial saying Republicans are going to run for this. Are you kidding me? I'm up for re-election this year. I'm going to run on this thing. This thing is awesome.
Right. Senator, you're very successful in business before you became a senator. They keep saying this bill is for billionaires. There's really nothing in here for billionaires. The 2017 tax reform lowered 1% on the top rate and the corporate rates for the country, not for CEOs. I think there's a misinterpretation.
Yeah, if you go look at this bill, again, who's it going to benefit? It's going to benefit working people. I hit the, you know, no tax on tips, no tax on overtimes. The biggest percentage of people who are going, the people who are going to see the biggest percentage of tax cuts are going to be the people who are, you know, working middle class people. This is really going to be a great bill for that. There's, you know, the child tax credit is going up to $2,200. The whole dependent, child care and dependent is going to go up to like $7,500. Businesses are going to be incented to create child care because we're taking up the incentives for that. So, you know, people are going to see it at their workplaces. You know, this takes care of kids. I mean, this is really such a good bill. Rural hospitals are going to benefit with a $50 billion hospital fund. We're strengthening our border. We're strengthening our defense. Again, you just look, we're unleashing American energy. This bill is fantastic and is really going to set this, you know, really be the legacy for this administration.
Absolutely. Senator Pete Ricketts, thanks so much for your time. Have a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Brian. You too.
You got it. Listen, we got a big hour coming your way. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm not a voter in New York City, and so I have no dog in that fight. And everything that I've read on him, I don't really agree with virtually any of it politically. So that's just where I'm at as a Democrat. I mean, so he's not even a Democrat, honestly.
He isn't a Democrat. I got to give Senator Fetterman some credit. He just comes out and goes, this guy Mamdani, Zohran Mamdani, does not like capitalism, thinks billionaires should not be allowed. He doesn't think, he said the NYPD is racist and anti-queer. This is a comment he's made. Doesn't seem to like Italians, certainly Columbus. There's a picture of him giving the finger. He lost his mind when he saw Tom Holman. Is that the way you want a leader to act? And this guy is really, when the president sometimes says communist, it's to show an extreme. But this guy really is beyond socialist, really. And when you have a person like that, if he's your party and your representative, you should take a stand. Mark Penn came out and said it. This is a Clinton pollster. Great guy. Fair man. Cut 22.
I think the best advice is for Democrats to run away from Mamdani. Having someone with anti-Semitic socialist views and tendencies as mayor would hurt the Democratic Party. But more importantly, it hurts the country. I think Republicans and Democrats have to get together on this and say they have a vested interest. They won't let 400,000 or 500,000 votes in New York, of a city of 8 million people, turn this city into a socialist experiment. I think it's important for them all to get together and, in fact, not let him win this general election just because he got a nomination.
Look, I hear you, Mark Penn, and I agree with you, but Democrats and Republicans are going to get together in a Democratic city. It's going to be Curtis Lee or Eric Adams, Cuomo or this guy. Cuomo is out of energy, out of gas. He has there's nothing behind him. He just lost a key endorser yesterday. Eric Adams, before this series of scandals, was probably going to get reelected. Now he's got back on his feet. Maybe he could tap into the few Republicans in the area, some people that Democrats that do not hate Trump, that maybe work with Trump in the area, see a reason to help out. But right now it is Mamdani by 10 points and Adams in last, Sliwa with 14 in third. Cuomo's 10 points out. Just said. Ken Martin, the DNC spokesperson, goes, hey, we're a Big Ten party. Yeah, Big Ten. You don't want an evil person in your party. This guy is evil.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the streets. They're in unmarked vans, wearing masks, being shipped off to foreign torture dungeons. No chance to mount a defense, not even a chance to kiss a loved one goodbye. Just grabbed up by masked agents, shoved into those vans, and disappeared.
That is Governor Waltz. And he is a commencement speaker and thought, hey, why don't I pretend like I'm still running for vice president and maybe a leading contender for president and mischaracterize a law enforcement division called ICE and say it's a Gestapo. These are Americans. Same. It's just like saying defund the police, defund ICE, which, by the way, I think Democrats want to do. And then ran from when they realized how ridiculous that statement was. Not that they learned anything, at least in New York, where 500,000 people thought a guy that wants to defund the police and says they're anti-queer, right? Anti-queer, that's what he said, and he got the nomination for the Democrats in New York City. Kendall Quayles has had enough. Kendall is a Minnesota GOP gubernatorial candidate, founder and president of the nonprofit organization Take Charge. Kendall, welcome.
Brian, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So, Kendall, what is your why take on Governor Waltz?
It's very simple, Brian. You know what? I love the state of Minnesota. It is a shadow of what it used to be. We can bring it back to its former glory. In fact, we can even do it beyond that, based on where the citizens of this state are just dire straits at how far we've declined in all sorts of metrics, economically, academically, and just the social standing. I mean, we've been an embarrassment, especially for the last 5 years.
But yet, then why do you keep reelecting this guy?
Well, we got two things going on. First of all, you know what? We got a party that we got to get together. We got to get a good candidate. I believe I'm a candidate that can actually not only galvanize the base of the Republican Party, but also get swing voters, We don't need Democrat voters, just the swing independent voters in our state. And a lot of times, you know, we get in the way. They control the media and they control everything else, just like in major blue states. But this time, they've outkicked their coverage here, even with their own base in the Democrat Party.
So tell me about your background. I understand you had a life in basically you had a working class, impoverished life. You're from the projects in Harlem. You later moved on to a trailer park in rural Oklahoma. Two very difficult and different places to live. What did that teach you?
Well, here's what that taught me, Brian. That, you know, no matter where you start your life in this country, you don't have to stay there for the rest of your life. There's a pathway out in America, and I took it. You know, I never got involved in drugs, or you know, never got involved in crime. You know, I'm not an athlete. You know, I'm not in that pro athlete caliber. I can't sing or dance, but I was just a regular guy wanting a better life, having lived in the housing projects of Harlem, in the trailer park in Oklahoma, all before I was 10 years old.
So I guess a key moment in your life. So you got three graduate degrees. You did everything from delivering pizza through college. Then you decided to go into the Army and became an officer in the Army. And that allowed you, I guess, to continue to learn and grow academically. What did the Army teach you?
Oh, just profound leadership skills. I guess, you know, the best leadership training you can get from any institution in the country. And then after I left the military, I got my first job in a major Fortune 100 company in sales and sales management, and then further leadership development, where I had responsibility for an $800 million book of business, responsibility for 200 people as a sales management, and then later into the home office, where I was involved in strategic marketing and development plans for major brands, billion-dollar brands. And Brian, I'll tell you this. This was an interesting fact. I'm working for a major company in New Jersey, major healthcare company. I'm an hour away on my 35th birthday. I'm an hour away from Harlem, where I was held up as a kid when the first day that my mother and my siblings arrived in Harlem. You know what? Only that kind of story happens in America, and it can happen to anybody, regardless of race. And this is what we're bringing forward in Minnesota, is bring back that opportunity of economic growth for everyone. We're a party that's all encompassing, and we want to unburden Minnesotans of the heavy weight of taxation, the burden they're putting on the economic prosperity for our state, and turn it around in a big way.
So here's a little of Tim Walz and what he believes. Like, for example, here are his progressive values.
Don't ever shy away from our progressive values. One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness.
The more police are there, the more tension it is. The more tension it is, the more chance you have to get things.
Protecting and supporting access to gender-affirming health care is essential.
He talks about this wall. I always say, let me know how high it is. If it's 25 feet, then I'll invest in the 30-foot ladder.
We saw large, peaceful protests focusing on the systemic changes.
So, I mean, this guy is not a genius. And if you watched him fall apart in the vice presidential debate, you know he's vulnerable. First, I guess you got to get the Republican nomination. But how do you plan on going at Tim Walz?
Well, it's very simple. He doesn't stand for the things that most Minnesotans want. We want economic prosperity. We just don't want to get by. We want to thrive. And to the point of your recording, the people in Minnesota want their city back. Minneapolis used to be a crown jewel of the major cities in the United States. In fact, in October of 2009, Forbes magazine rated it the number one city for the best quality of life and safety in the country. We've dropped far from that. I mean, even in the black communities, that when Minneapolis voted for defund the police, it was the black community of Minneapolis that rejected that initiative. He's on the wrong side of this. The Democrats are on the wrong side. And for the life of me, it kills. I don't understand why they're doubling down on these policies, because it's going to lose them the election in a big way.
I understand. I guess he's going to run again, and he definitely wants to run for president. We remember that without your great mayor of Minneapolis, it was a great idea to let the George Floyd rioters take over the police headquarters. Takes over the precinct, and I don't think that anybody wants to be a cop anymore. Well, I don't know how. Why would you ever wear that uniform when your own city does not back you and they have that little respect for you?
Well, that's exactly right, Brian. But however, here's what police officers will do. They will sign up for a leader that they can trust and respect and know that they're going to cover their back. They got their backs. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to hire state officers, state police officers, and we're going to deploy them in the Twin Cities to retake Minneapolis and St. Paul back to normal, whether the city council or the mayors want them or not. Officers are not going to sign up to put their life on the line for the Minneapolis city council or the mayors, to your point, but they'll do it for someone they respect. And I've already got that backing.
So I want you to hear what Tim Walz thinks about. Are you a conservative? Would you say you're a conservative?
Absolutely.
So this is what he says you think about him.
But I think this notion of toxicity and masculinity needs to be separated. And I think it's been conflated. And I think we're going to have to work on that a little bit. And I think there is a crisis.
I think some of us scare them. I think I scare them a little bit. Why they spend so much time on it. No, I'm serious, because I can fix a truck. They know I'm not bullshit on this.
Yeah.
I'm not putting this in people's grill. I don't know if my identity is not hunting. My identity is not football coaching. My identity is not, you know, a beard and a truck.
So the thing is so interesting about him, you never know quite what he's saying, but do you see, he says conservative men are scared of him. Do you find yourself scared of him?
Tim Walz is, if you look up masculinity in the dictionary, his picture would be on what masculinity is not, literally.
The antonym.
That's exactly right. You know, this idea that he can speak man code and all this other things, it's a caricature. He's a caricature of what real men are. You know, real men are loyal. Real men can be counted on. Real men stand up for people less fortunate than others. He's done none of the sorts. I mean, literally, our state has been in rapid decline. Brian, I can tell you, we have tons of people that moved to Florida, Tennessee, and Texas. But even the people that have moved into our neighboring states have left the states they love for South Dakota, for Iowa, just 5 miles away from the border, just to get out of the burdensome of and the crime and everything else of the state they loved.
All right, Kendall, best of luck. I just got to tell you, the New York Times, they're just breaking down what happened in the last election. And it looks like Republicans are losing the white vote, but they're losing a few points off the white vote. But I think it's good news for them and you. It says the young men support for Democrats between 2020 and 2024 overall dropped. Young black men dropped from 85% to 75% in support. Young Latino men, they once had 63% support in 2020. It's down to 47%. So Trump had 88% of the white vote. It fell to 78%, but he got so many more votes from minority communities and from men and from young men, because Democrats are literally scaring them away.
Well, here's the scenario. When people see my picture and they hear my story. So my picture, when I talk about my picture, I'm talking about my wife of 40 years, my five children, and our two grandchildren, and realize that I came from a trailer park from Harlem, literally several blocks up from where I'm at right now in your studio. They say, I want that life. How do I get that life? He can do it, and he wants to open a door for us. I want that. And you know what? Most Americans want that part of in their life, and they want that kind of leader leading their state.
All right. So if you're able to get this nomination, have you reached out to the Trump team?
We've gotten signals that we're sending them to the Trump team. I've got a guy on my campaign team that used to work for President Trump. So we're doing some backdoor channels to get there.
All right. You'll need him behind you. I know he's no fan of Tim Walz, believe me. So Kendall Quails, best of luck. He's running for the GOP running for the Republican ticket, the Republican side of the gubernatorial race over Minnesota. Thanks, Kendall.
Thank you. And people can find out more about us at kqformn.com. That's kqformn.com.
All right. Thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at FoxAcrossAmerica.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a city that is at a tipping point, at a precipice, unlike ever before. And we're under attack by Donald Trump and the Republicans. So we have no choice but to come together. But the people have spoken. So if for me it is a privilege and an honor to be here and support Assemblyman Sara Mamdani for mayor of the city of New York.
So that is the Democratic powerhouse, Latino powerhouse, Adriana Espaillat, who's been a longtime supporter of Cuomo and decided, okay, I don't know who Sara Mamdani is or barely met him, but since he's got the nomination, I'm going to support him. So people are supporting this guy despite what he stands for, which is ban billionaires, for socialism, rent freezes, free buses, arrest Bibi Netanyahu, arrest the president of India, Modi, which, by the way, he doesn't have the ability to do. But this is what he ran on. He says the NYPD should be defunded. They're anti-queer. And he says domestic violence situations should be like jaywalking and cops should never be involved. They should send social workers. Cops are probably right now listening to me, whether they're in uniform or not, and laughing out loud, because if there's any time some domestic situations need a cop, it is a domestic situation. So if you want to tell the cops not to go, that'll be fine. But just go, what does this 33-year-old know about law enforcement? An African studies major at a university, in left-wing university, Bowdoin or Bowdoin, whatever it is, B-O-W-D-O-I-N. I'm not sure what it is. I couldn't get in there, didn't apply for it. But he's an anti-Israeli Muslim Senate candidate. There's another one. Get this. So if people think that Mamdani is just a one-off. Now, fast forward to Michigan. You got an anti-Israel Muslim Senate candidate. He ties his campaign to socialist, I think communist, Zohran Mamdani. He, El Said, is running in a competitive field to replace Senator Gary Peters. So do I think he's going to win? No. But now this guy's got a party. It's like the squad's got a party. This guy is to the left of the squad, although AOC seems to have mentored him. Here's what I think is really ridiculous. You got Mark Penn, who makes a statement. Democratic strategist wants Democrats to win, but he's there to analyze. Said Democrats should run from this guy. Run from him. Ken Martin, DNC chair. How does he handle it? Knowing that Donald Trump will make this person the poster child for Democrats in the midterms. Cut 23.
What about concerns from some of your Jewish colleagues in particular about him not outright condemning the phrase globalize the intifada in a recent interview? Some of your Jewish colleagues have said that that could be very disturbing, potentially dangerous. Do you agree with that?
You know, there's no candidate in this party that I agree 100% of the time with, to be honest with you. There's things that I don't agree with Mamdani that he said. But at the end of the day, I always believe, as a Democratic Party chair in Minnesota for the last 14 years and now the chair of the DNC, that you win through addition. We are a big tent party. Yes, it leads to dissent and debate, and there's differences of opinions on a whole host of issues.
We should decide who gets in the tent. You know, you'd be a huge tent. You got to decide who's in the tent. You want this guy in your tent? Then you represent. You have to reflect what he represents. It's going to be insane. And he's going to have this huge budget, this huge federal funding. And believe me, I know people say, well, he'll be reined in by who? By a crazy city council, like they all are, way to the left. Or by Albany, dominated with a supermajority. I believe it's still a supermajority by Democrats. Who's going to rein this guy in? Now, current Mayor Adams can't get matching funds because of some problems he had with other donors. John Fetterman just said what Mark Penn said. Viral Democrat. Cut 20.
I'm not a voter in New York City, and so I have no dog in that fight. And everything that I've read on him, I don't really agree with virtually any of it politically. So that's just where I'm at as a Democrat. I mean, so he's not even a Democrat, honestly.
Yeah, he's not a Democrat. So the one thing he did do, he got young voters out. He got them energized. They're ready to go. You know, all the guys, they seem to be the protesters. The ones you see on the college campuses, they got the energy. They like his videos. I don't even think they have a clue what socialism does. And it also is a symptom of what's coming out of our school system, too. These teachers, these professors that seem to hate the country and want to counter-narrative our system that's been successful, now all of a sudden they got themselves a candidate. That's where this guy came from. His dad taught him that, reaffirmed by the colleges he chose. Overall, this is exactly what the doctor ordered for Republicans. Also, there's a toxic way that Democrats are approaching things. Let's physically fight law enforcement with ICE. You ever going to take that? Let's make sure illegal immigrants on marijuana farms with kids underage don't get scooped up by law enforcement and brought back to safety. James Carville knows one thing. They got a problem with messaging, and they got a problem with men. Cut 25.
They've been erased from the culture. We've just erased them. You don't exist. No one sees you. No one cares about you. You want a cold beer, you want a hamburger, and you want to watch the football game. No, no, you can't do that. Not football. Beer, no. You should be drinking a nice fruit spritzer or something. And like, oh, get off of my back, right? And then if you have sex, you must wear a condom.
I just, we have some of the most bizarre sound bites. That's the way he wants to get men back. All right. Crazy candidates, crazy analysts. That's one crazy party. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Make sure you go to BrianKilmeade.com and see me in Dallas, Texas, August 23rd. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.
I'm a knucklehead at times.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. It's been a busy day already. You have, a lot going on. For example, you have the Secretary of State meeting with this Chinese foreign minister. I believe it's the first face-to-face meeting over this Asian summit. Yesterday, our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio met with Lavrov of Russia, so that was impactful. They said there was a different approach they're both having, but he did express his disappointment the way Russians have handled this so far. And the President of the United States will be in Texas today with local leaders trying to see what went wrong on July 4th that caused so much death and destruction with the that flash flood. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. I think they shot 8 bullets. Our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot.
That was the president talking about his assassination. It's 1 year. 1 year from Sunday when he almost lost his life.
Number two.
Agencies and in departments are making decisions all the time, but that one was troubling to me. And my bet is it's very troubling to the president. But the most important thing is that he reversed it.
And that's what he's talking about, reversing and giving, selling drones to Ukraine and more weapons, especially by the horrific actions of the Russians now aiming for apartment buildings. And there's stories of them aiming for children with these sophisticated drones. Trump doesn't abandon Ukraine. That's important. But what caused the pause to begin with? And what's happening Monday with massive sanctions that are going to be handed to him from the Senate on Russia?
Number one.
I think there's a pattern there that if you're breaking the law, you're protected by the Democrats. And if you're trying to enforce it, you're demonized. The same thing about the border. This, all of this violence is a symptom of the Democratic Party not saying anything.
That is Victor Davis Hanson, the genius. Crackdown on illegal immigrants intensifies across the board on ICE and illegals and their outlaw defenders. They clash in the streets and on the marijuana farms and now in the courts. We have the latest. And to talk about that, let's bring in Senator Mark Wayne Mullen of Oklahoma. Senator, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? You must be the hardest working
political reporter I know. You're everywhere, brother. So
well,
proud of
thanks,
you.
Man. It's fun. We got our show Sunday night. We're going to be going doing that shortly. But, Senator, I can say the same thing about you. You're working with the House to pass a big, beautiful bill. You're working on what's going on with Ukraine. You're working to get through the Senate and communicating with people. So the president's got you definitely working for him. First off, on the Ukraine reversal, are you glad?
Well, I don't know if I would actually consider it a reversal. And yes, but I think this has been kind of blown out of proportion. The Secretary Hegseth never wanted a pause it. What he wanted to do is do an internal review. Because coming after, what we had to deal with in Iran, the 12-day war, what we've been supporting Israel with in Gaza and then Ukraine, we wanted to make sure that we weren't putting ourselves at a disadvantage by weakening our stockpiles. And so there was never a pause. It was like, hey, we need to evaluate this before we put out a full shipment to make sure that our industry, our military industry, can be able to meet the supply needs. And it got blown out of proportion. But I think the president, by going out there and making and clarifying it, saying, look, we're supporting Israel because – or not Israel, but Ukraine, because he understands peace through strength. And he'll never get Putin to actually negotiate with Ukraine if Ukraine is in a weak position. The president has been very clear. He wants to end the killing, full stop. He doesn't want to have a ceasefire. He wants to stop the war and end the killing. And if anybody understands negotiations and where you negotiate from – It's President Trump. And so I appreciate where he's at, but the pause was kind of the memorandum that was put out by the SecDef was if you actually read it, there was a lot of, I guess, liberally used in interpreting that.
So Marco Rubio said this. He told Lavrov, look, president's been clear. He's disappointed, frustrated, but there's not been more flexibility on the Russian side to bring about an end to the conflict. And they told Lavrov that. And look, the president was willing to take tremendous heat internationally, domestically, and just say, look, you stop the fighting. We'll start trading with you again. We'll start your economy's a mess. We'll start. And people are going to get mad at me. I'm going to do this. Just stop the fighting. We'll deal with the border. But let's just end, and he says that he's been BSing me. I'm sanitizing for the show. And the president says, I'm not going to take it. Just like Iran. Let's talk. Five rounds. I gave you a shot. You're BSing me. Now I'm going to give you the alternative. To me, this is an example of him sticking to his word.
Right. What actually is, President Trump doesn't bluff. We've always said that. If he says this is his red line, he's not Obama where the red line just disappears. This is President Trump who understands where he's got to come from, which is why the world leaders are clamoring to meet with him and be on his good side. I will tell you, when he was working with Senator Lindsey Graham and myself and the others that were putting together the sanction bill for against Russia, the president was very involved in that. We were making sure we're not getting ahead of the White House or Secretary Rubio. We want to work in conjunction with them. But I will tell you, as soon as we put it out, Russia reached out from official channels and wanted to meet with Witkoff and myself and Joni Ernst and Lindsey Graham to start talking about how they could avoid it, because the president also understands that, one, their economy is going to be hit, but by offering them the olive branch, and this is kind of stuff that happens maybe that the public doesn't always get to see, what the president was doing by giving them the olive branch, saying, look, we will avoid the sanctions. If you will get out of Ukraine, we'll even try to normalize relationships and start working with your economy. We don't want to wreck your economy. We're giving you an opportunity here. Now you choose to either grab hold. It's like a probation officer one time I was sitting in when I was dealing with youth sanctions and juvenile courts way back before politics. I had a probation officer. This was one of his key phrases. He said, look, young man, I'm giving you a rope by putting you on probation. You're going to do two things. You're going to tie this around your waist and help us pull you out of the direction you're going and get you out of the hole, or you're going to tie it around your neck and you're going to find yourself in prison. But we're giving you an opportunity. And that's what President Trump has done with Putin. He's given him an opportunity to get out of the hole he's in and actually do something good for his country instead of allowing his countrymen to get killed in Ukraine. And so far, Putin has slapped the hand that's trying to help him. And the president patience will run out at some point.
Yeah, he thinks he can win. That's by all reports. These criminologists says he thinks he can win. Now, President Trump yesterday said he plans a major statement on Russia on Monday, and everyone believes it's the sanctions that you guys put together, bipartisan sanctions. I think got at least 85 votes for it. So I guess Russia, they have the weekend to think about it because it looks like you guys are ready to go.
Well, and keep in mind, it won't just be us. As I said before, we're working in conjunction with the White House and with Secretary Rubio. So we in Congress can do so much. The executive branch also has the authority to move a little bit farther, and they can do that with the State Department. And so there's several different I hate to use the term, but I'm going to anyways. There are several different bullets that can be fired here.
Understood. So let's talk about the big, beautiful bill. A lot of people, it's got 38% approval. The Republicans are over the moon for it. Well, why do you think the American people are not overwhelmingly as happy as most Republicans are with this?
Well, I tell everybody it depends on which state you're polling, because we're polling the Midwest, which Oklahoma includes in. We love it. If you poll in Texas, they'll love it. You poll most border states, they're going to love it as long as you stay out of the liberal cities. And so one of the reasons why people like it. Yes, taxes is a huge issue, but since people haven't seen the results of the taxes yet, they'll see it when they file their 25 tax returns and start getting, the money back that the Democrats are going to take away from you in a tune of $4 trillion. They will start recognizing it. And then right now what they recognize is security. And border security is what is so important here. And I think what has been caught up in the rhetoric about Medicaid, because the Democrats were saying that we're killing billions or millions of people, which is absolutely absurd. We're securing Medicaid, making sure it's there for people that actually deserve it. I use this number all the time, Brian. 35 million people, unfortunately, in the United States live under poverty. That is under the poverty line. That is what Medicaid was designed for. There's over 90 million people that are signed up on it right now that shouldn't be there. That means that more than double are signed up for Medicaid for what it was designed for, and it's not sustainable. So we're making sure it's there for people that need it. You start talking about border security. Let me just run through some numbers here for you. $46 billion to finally complete the wall. That means another president can't come in and start selling the material for pennies on the dollar and stop securing our border. That means this border wall will be completed. We funded it completely. It's in law. It's signed by the President of the United States. It has to be built. So we're going to have a border security wall from one end to the next on the southern side. It's $4.1 billion for additional Border Patrol agents. That's huge, right? It's $6 billion for new technology, because some of this place is so hard. Some of these borders, including the northern border, is very hard and remote to get to. So instead of having a physical barrier, you can put eyes on it by having trip sensors that are very high tech, stuff that has been very proven. We can also detect tunnels that go extremely deep. I'm not going to get into details to it, but we will actually be able to secure both of us. We have money to hire 10,000 new ICE agents and those others that support ICE agents, because Border Patrol and ICE, people don't realize those are different individuals. Border is border. They can't really arrest people in the interior of the United States. That's where ICE comes in. And then we have, because you see what's happening, right? The morale of the ICE agents aren't exactly high. So what President Trump did smart of him to do is he's like, listen, we're going to give these ICE agents a $10,000 bonus a year while they're fighting this influx of illegals that came in over the last 4 years in a tune of 20 million people. It's not popular. It's hard on their families. Right. We want to make sure it's worth their while. So while they're not necessarily doing it for money, we're telling them thank you by giving them a bonus of $10,000 a year while they're cleaning up the mess that the Biden administration left over. Mm-hmm. All that is important, because that restores law and order back to our streets. And that's just part of what the One Big Beautiful Bill does. This actually puts America back on track for success.
Just so you know, there's the counter narrative. They're all about Medicaid, and those people that were above the poverty line getting Medicaid financed by the federal government instead of the state government, what happens to them? And that's what do you say?
So the ones that are above the poverty line, the first thing we do is we got to make sure you qualify for the program you're in. a lot of people over the last 4 years was put into the program Medicaid, yeah. and it wasn't even checked. So when you start looking at those that just didn't qualify underneath the current policy, underneath the Biden policy, underneath the Obama policy, there were 6 million people that were on it that never should have qualified. So those that didn't qualify were pulling them off. And then those that are on there were saying, okay, if you have no dependents and you have no illness, you have a work requirement. There's no reason why you're not working. If you have no illness and no dependents and you can work, you were requiring you to work 20 hours a week. I mean, you put 20 hours in by Monday and Tuesday, you had 20 hours done. I know you did. 20 hours a week is not hard for somebody. You can either work 20 hours a week, you can volunteer 20 hours a week, or you can go to school 20 hours a week. It's not that difficult. And what we're saying is if you're going to be on it, then we don't want to make you permanent residents of Medicaid and the taxpayer subsidizing you for being lazy. We're saying that you have to have something to be better in yourself. So go out and start trying to better yourself. We're going to incentivize you. And then on the second part, the Democrats are saying that it's too strenuous on them to fill out the means test twice a year, because right now they only got to fill out once a year. We're saying you're going to have to prove that you still qualify for it every 6 months. Are you kidding me? You're telling me that it's too big of a burden for you to be able to fill out paperwork to say you still qualify for tax subsidies every 6 months. So all this is saying is that you're going to have to prove yep. that you can still be there. So what we're saying is we're not going to support you to be lazy. That's not the taxpayer's responsibility. If you have an illness or you're not able to work because you're in an unfortunate situation where you have to take care of babies, we're saying, okay, we will support that. But just because you want to stay home and play video games, no, we're not doing that.
I hear you. So the work requirement is popular with the American people, and it worked welfare. A lot of people say, okay, I'm going to go back to work and get my own job rather than one the government assigns me. Larry Summers, who used to be Treasury Secretary, said this. He said that I stand by our judgment, meaning him and Robert Rubin during he was economics advisor during the Clinton years. He goes, I stand by our judgment that this bill will most likely slow growth, risk a financial crisis, exasperate trade deficit, undermine national security by exhausting government's borrowing capacity.
Well, I'm glad he's not still running things because that's absolutely not true. The economy is speaking completely different. Not that the stock market is a good judgment of the economy, but you see how the stock market responded. We also know by keeping more money in local, meaning keeping money in the people's hands that's earning it, and letting them invest in their own community and their own state. The state and the local government spends money a lot better than Washington, D.C. We saw that in 2017 and 2018 underneath the Trump 45. When the CBO and all the economists said that this was going to wreck our economy by having these large tax cuts. And what happened is the Treasurer actually saw an increase of $1.5 billion in the first year and a half,
yep.
Not the reverse. You know that. So and this is Reagan economics. I mean, this isn't anything new. Reagan economics also proved this back in the 80s, that this works when you invest in the American people, not invest in Washington, D.C., the economy grows, and that's what the president knows too. We're investing in the American people and allowing them to actually actually keep more of what they earn and choose how they want to invest it, not spend it, but invest it. There's a big difference between giving out checks during COVID where people go out and buy TVs versus giving it to people that are actually going to invest it and build jobs too.
Go get them. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you, Brian. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And the violence doesn't come from Democrats, just to be clear. I mean, obviously, anyone can be a criminal, but it is MAGA. It's specifically MAGA faction. Like, I don't think traditional Republicans are getting engaged in all of this, but, like, even when we look at and they don't talk about the assassination attempts anymore that took place with Donald Trump, but these were Trump supporters.
What are you talking about? They weren't Trump supporters. Trump supporters shoot at you? That's a great Congresswoman Crockett, who is upset that Joe Biden's staff is being called in to say, why did you cover for him and who was making all the decisions? By the way, there's somebody else that came in today. Ashley Williams, who is she? I don't think she's that big of a deal, but she was close to him. Evidently, she's in for a transcribed interview with staffers. At least she showed up. The Biden's doctor took the fifth instead of answering questions like, did you cover up President Trump, President Biden's mental failures? Do you think that Ronnie Jackson would have had trouble with that question for Barack Obama or for Donald Trump? He would have taken it a second. So, you know, there's no explanation except for you do not want to implicate yourself in a crime for taking the fifth in this circumstance. And that's exactly what happened. But they're going to have some bigger staffers coming in next week if they do, in fact, show up, like Zeitz and Donilon.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, it was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. And fortunately, got down quickly. You know, people were screaming, and I got down quickly, fortunately, because I think they shot 8 bullets. And one got me, and one got another one, and one got another one, and one killed Corey, the firefighter, great guy. And, you know, we had a tremendous, massive crowd. Tens of thousands of people were there. And our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot. If he didn't do that, you would have had an even worse situation.
The president talking about an assassination attempt 1 year ago on his life on Sunday. Joining us now is Tommy Lahren from OutKick. And, of course, all over the network, about to do Outnumbered. But I wanted some quality minutes. So, Tommy, where were you when you heard about it? And what are your thoughts a year later? Do you feel as though the investigation is complete and you have all your answers?
We definitely don't have all the answers, Brian. And also, I would like to add that I'm currently sitting in your chair in the studio. No. So I might take it with me. You have a very nice microphone. But aside from that, listen, I was like everybody else watching on the news and seeing the assassination attempt, you know, come across the screen. And that to me is the moment that changed everything. People think it was the debate with Joe and Donald Trump. I don't necessarily think that was the turning point. I really do believe it was the assassination attempt, because folks could not forget the images of President Trump standing there with his fist in the air, fight, 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 having just survived an assassination attempt, contrasting that to Joe Biden, who could barely move or walk or complete a sentence. To me, that is the reason why he finally decided or was pushed out the door completely by his own party. I think it was the assassination attempt number one that really caused Joe Biden to drop out of that race when he did.
And also the way he got it back up, how you react under fire really defines who your character is. And that was true to his character. Number two on this whole incident was, if you combine that with the, I think it was 6 court cases, one of which was a May conviction, and then we had another court case staring at us, and they all look as farcical as the next, especially the one over in Georgia. And you see, okay, they're trying to put him in jail. They convicted him something in the craziest Frankenstein crimes you could ever assemble. And now you, they're shooting at him when he's on the stage. What is it about this guy that they just can't stop? Why are they so desperate to stop him? They were not like this to stop Bush. They were not like this to stop other Republicans, Romney or McCain. There's something about Trump that they would do anything to stop him. And I think that got people on board.
Yeah, President Trump, from the moment he came down that escalator, he really broke apart the uniparty that was Republicans and Democrats, and there not being much of a difference between the two parties when it came down to, you know, brass tacks. So President Trump was a huge disruptor, and there are people on both sides of the aisle who never liked that. But seeing how resilient that man was and is, and as you mentioned, Brian, everything that that man went through, not just the court cases and the witch hunts, but let's go back to the original witch hunts. He was barely in office the first time, and they're investigating him for how many years? It was constant impeachment, investigation, Mueller report. Then, you know, the man goes through 2020 and a COVID pandemic, and then he comes back, resurrects his political career, which many said he could never do, runs for president again. They throw the court cases, the witch hunts at him, and then he survives two assassination attempts. And not only that, he debates Joe Biden and has to take on a brand new candidate a couple of months before the election. This man is unstoppable, and that's why he has the support, the followers, the fan base that he has, and he always will. It's because nothing can take this man down.
You realize he's gotten more votes each. He's at three elections. He's got more votes in 2020 than 2016, and more in 2024 than to 2020 and in 2016. So it's not one of those things they're like, well, what are they going to do? He was their nominee. It's that people, you know, people like what they see. And I'll tell you what, there's nonstop action. I know the president's going to be in Texas today. He's going to talk to Will Kane at some point from Texas after that devastation. But let's talk about what's happening politically in New York, if I can, because you're here now. I know you'll never be a New Yorker, and I know that you don't want to be a New Yorker. You're in Nashville from South, via the Dakotas. How about this? The Zohan Mamdani now lands a key endorsement from Cuomo. He has more votes than anybody else in the primary. What does it tell you about this city that you're in that he is the Democratic nominee and he's a socialist slash communist, anti-law enforcement, who doesn't like billionaires and despises capitalism? And he seems to be the choice.
It's unsettling, to say the least. I would also say there are a lot of very, very smart, educated people in this city, but they're not showing it, certainly not with the primary that they gave to Zohran Mamdani. And also, how can you be running for the mayor of the financial capital of the world and actively say you essentially want to destroy the thing that made this the financial capital of the world, which is capitalism? It doesn't make any sense. It's like running for something in Hollywood and saying you want to destroy the movie industry. It makes no sense. But I think that this is part of the problem. If you look at the people that are voting for this guy, not all, but you know, the majority, it's white, maybe upper class, highly educated, yet rather stupid people who seem to think that all the things that built the great wealth and the great luxury in this country should be completely transformed into third world communist socialist notions. It's unsettling. And you know what? Tennessee, we're bursting at the seams already from the Californians. And if New York City elects this guy, boy, Nashville real estate, Florida real estate, Texas, it's all going to go through the roof. Nobody's going to want to be here anymore.
He says he's going to address Bibi Netanyahu. He doesn't have that authority. And he's going to address the president of India, Modi. He doesn't have that authority anymore. And we did not know he's from Uganda. So I guess he is African-American. So we're always finding out something else about him. The other thing is, I'm too busy in my life to listen to, and it's sad, to Michelle Obama's podcast. Because she's always providing much insight that I should know. For example, about men. You know, we know that she said some odd things about her husband. I didn't want a son because I don't want him to grow up like Barack. I mean, really? Here's her latest. See if you can unwind this for me. She's talking about men and confidence. Cut 24.
They're always hedging, you know, because in the back of our minds, we weren't raised with the certainty of maleness that, you know, kind of the confidence that young men in their 30s have, which they haven't earned. They just have it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't start feeling that and owning that until our 50s and 60s at a time when we start to be treated as invisible in society.
Okay. Well, I have to say there, can you please help me?
for a party. And I know that she's not necessarily the leader of the party, but in some ways the Obamas have been for the last decade at least, if not more, for a party that's hemorrhaging male voters. I'm not so sure that Michelle Obama is doing anything to help that cause. When you say that they haven't earned it and the certainty of maleness, I would also argue right now, it is very difficult to be a man in America, you know, in some aspects,
not in
all, but in some, and you're automatically the villain. Yep. You're automatically every, you know, ounce of and shred of blame lies on your shoulders, especially if you're a white man in America, a white middle class man in America. Boy, you got a difficult road ahead of you. Maybe not in some ways, but in others, certainly. The fact that she sits here, though, from her incredible place of privilege and talks about how disadvantaged and oppressed she is on every episode of this podcast is truly astounding. New levels of cringe unlocked.
But here's the thing. What do you mean you become invisible at 50 or 60 if you're a woman? With that last line at the end, I go, what? That's 50% of our audience. People in their 50s and 60s. Invisible? What does society do to 50-year-olds?
I don't know. And maybe that's an antiquated notion, by the way. And I think she's referring to maybe Hollywood standards when men or when women get into a certain age in Hollywood, it's harder for them to get roles. But that's certainly not, you know, what I would say the description is for most women in America. I would also add to this point of all this disadvantage, women have it so rough in America, all this. Look at President Trump's cabinet. Look at the people in leadership roles within the Trumpverse. A lot of them are women. And in fact, an increasing number are women, and they're women in their 50s and in their 60s. So I guess Michelle Obama just needs to take a look at the Trump administration for some inspiration, because they're sure kicking butt over there.
I know. Maybe you'll bring that up on the couch on Outnumbered. Could you bring that up, Tommy?
I sure will. I think it'll be a fun topic. Let's see if we get to that. We've got a lot to get to today, but we'll definitely bring the spice and a lot of women on that couch with a lot of opinions. I hope Michelle is watching.
Right. That's allowed in society today. Right. Tommy Lahren, thanks so much. We're going to check out Outkick all the time because you're on it.
Thanks, Brian.
Go get him. Back in a moment.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I am joined by national reporter and columnist for the Washington Examiner, Selena Zito.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't think our party did a great job on the border, but before. And then I think making it more secure and deport all the criminals and to find the appropriate balance between acknowledging the important contributions that our migrant workers contribute. And now I think that's what's entirely appropriate. And now I'd like to remind everybody, calling for to abolish ICE is insane. And politically, that's ridiculous. You know, ICE is necessary. And as long as they continue to round up all of the criminals, I mean, they're doing an important job if that's what they're doing.
Right. They want to point to things that maybe didn't exist. Tom Homan said didn't exist. And that was Senator John Fetterman, Democrat, who said abolish ICE, like abolish the police, is absolutely crazy. That's what Democrats are doing. Blood in the streets, Hakeem Jeffries, no response. It doesn't make any sense to me. And not backing up, not having a border during the Biden years, denying that it was a problem during the Biden years, blaming Republicans for not doing reform, saying Republicans are making things worse for political gain, not going to the border himself except for to show up one time. They cleaned it all up for him and had a German shepherd find drugs in a car. That was Joe Biden's visit to the border. Once Kamala Harris was there for about 15 minutes. And then that opened up everything. It is one of the reasons why Donald Trump won. And when he sealed the border, and now with all this money, and you heard Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, with all the money and technology flowing to the border, this thing's going to be shut. It's going to be shut for years to come. And Democrats are going to should be thanking Republicans for it, because it just takes it off the docket. Here's Tom Homan on the protesters that's making his job so much harder. Cut two.
Look, I've said this from day one. They can protest all they want. But if they cross the line, they're going to be arrested and they're going to be prosecuted. There's zero tolerance. They have the First Amendment rights. I had 1,000 protesters at my house. Whatever. You're not going to stop me. I'm not going to shut up. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. But you can't cross that line. You have the right to protest. I support that. But when you cross the line on impeding us, you're going to be arrested. If you cross the line putting hands on a ICE officer,
Zero tolerance, you're going to be arrested. So yell and scream all you want. You're not going to stop ICE from doing our job.
They're not, and they're getting more people. And you heard, I did not know this, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, the 940-page big, beautiful bill, they get $10,000 every year as a bonus. They're trying to let them know they're doing important work. I hope they do. I mean, you look at some of these scenes, even though they got the guns, the weapons, the armaments, some of these other guys are armed up too, and they're supposedly Americans. It's crazy. But listen to why they're militarized. I listen to why they're organized. And I know, and President Trump indicated this when Peter Ducey asked him, that there's money behind it. This is Tiffany Cross, a marginal commentator on CNN, Cut 6.
We are normalizing a government agency disappearing people. We are normalizing, we're talking about it like it's no big deal that they are kidnapping people and transporting them to concentration camps, both domestic and foreign.
I think that's kind of insulting to, you know,
I think it's
Jewish
insulting
Holocaust
what they're doing. Insulting to Jewish okay. I find it insulting that you could even fix your mouth to defend this disgusting behavior.
Are there gas ovens at these?
It's not a
these,
death
It
camp.
Doesn't matter. It's a concentration camp what they're doing.
So if I'm a person who has got an empty life, underachieving in my career, one of the 7 million who decide in their 20s who decide that they don't want to work, they think their mission is maybe put on a stocking cap and go and harass ICE officers or do facial recognition, use some of those apps and find out who they are and go after their houses. It's insane. Kevin McCarthy knows the West Coast mindset, and he knows the Democratic mindset. He was Speaker of the House, Cut 9.
You have to respect the rule of law, but it's also being encouraged by the other side of the aisle. They literally said we need violence against it. They are saying that. I think even Hakeem got asked the question the other day. He would not denounce it. If your leadership will not denounce this type of activity where individuals are being shot when they're upholding the law, that has got to stop. You are responsible, too.
Yeah, it just everything seems just to be backwards. So, I mean, you see what's happening. I feel bad for these guys, but I think you should don't call it. Don't say ICE as if they're some foreign entity. Understand, you know the third rail of politics, one of the stupidest things you ever heard. You listen to Carville, Karl Rove, Axelrod. One of the stupidest things that's ever been said in politics was defund the police. They are saying now defund ICE and defund the police. They have a guy running for mayor that wants to do just that. He's already called NYPD a racist organization. Victor Davis Hanson talked about it and says, because he's also on the West Coast. And somehow these guys have been able to act lawlessly and they're resisting the fact that law and order's come to their doorstep, Cut 11.
And they look back to 2020, 5 months of rioting, death, destruction, chaos, $14,000 arrest. And these protesters think they didn't do anything to those people. So there's no downside for us doing these things. And the Democrats say, well, there's an upside because in 2020, we had Donald Trump in a lose-lose situation. If he called in the Marines or the Guards, he was Hitler. And if he didn't, he couldn't control the chaos. And we're going to replay that now that we don't have any institutional power, but we still have that paradigm, and that's what they're trying to do, to create mayhem and force right. Donald Trump either to use excessive force or no force at all and then look impotent.
Well, but the thing is, he keeps winning in court. I know they have a court case now that's going to limit ICE operations. They'll just appeal it and fix it. And the ICE operations in front of a judge, drumroll please, appointed by Joe Biden. Good. So we know where he's going to stand for the illegal immigrant. And one of the things this judge said is, Home Depot is a safe zone for illegal immigrants. Since when? What board game have they been playing? I mean, are you kidding me? It's a safe zone for illegal immigrants, Home Depot? Thank you. Since when? Crazy. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes. The one thing I think they could be doing better is the president's going to be coming out, and I'll talk about this on Sunday on One Nation. And he's going to be coming out and saying, for people been there for 10, 15, 20 years, and you have not committed a crime, can be backed by an employer who will sponsor you. You get a work extended work visa, whatever you want to call it, regularization, and you get to keep staying and you get to work. But I also think with that should be a standard wage. And I think that, hey, by the way, are you farmers? Are you giving these guys insurance? Give it to them. So, but don't make them citizens. You can never reward the behavior. Everyone in the last 4 years, you got to get out. You had a million left already. Need more for your leaf. Got it? Number two is hospitality meat packers. Farmers make up 1% of our workforce, maybe three combined. A lot of them are run just by illegal immigrants. If they're depressing wages, the wages has got to come up, and these people got to be accounted. But I would not chuck them out and hurt our economy. It's got to be what's best for us. Charlie Kirk is going to be on. He disagrees with me on that. Michael Schellenberger is going to be on with me. It's going to be great. We'll talk about Saudi Arabia and MBS and also have Kennedy to do media. It's going to be a great show. Make sure you watch every single second. It'll be Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern time. And always listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.